It is a Friday, and that means it's time to visit with Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch here on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. By the way, a lot of news we're going to get into concerning the Hall of Fame, and on my TV show this weekend, 10:30 on Fox 2, a Hall of Fame baseball theme. Larry Walker, who's going into Major League Baseball's Hall of Fame, will be my guest, along with Tommy Herr of the Cardinals Hall of Fame, and a behind-the-scenes look at the Cardinals Hall of Fame and Museum with Brian Finch, and that is all this weekend. Make sure you tune in. DVR it, whatever you got to do, but it's a good show. That's coming up 10:30 Sunday night on Fox 2. This is presented by the Doctors of Blue Tail Medical Group, some of the nation's top experts in the fields of sports medicine and stem cell regenerative therapies. If you are in line to get surgery, before you do it, talk to Doctors Bays, Crane, and Wolf. They're experts in stem cell regenerative therapy. We're talking about your body's stem cells redirected to concentrate all of their power into helping you before surgery. So if you're a high school athlete, a vet, your joints have been worn by age, think Blue Tail Medical Group. The number to call, 636-778-2900, and visit them at BlueTailMedicalGroup.com. All right, Ben Fredrickson, you going to tune in this weekend on Fox 2? You better.
I think the ratings have gone up since I made an appearance, right? I gotta dig up the latest numbers. You got to mention for folks, too, they can also stream it live on the website.
That's true. Yeah, if you miss it, you can just go to the website. Thank you very much. And I should mention the
I do what I can.
The ratings on the episode you were on were not great, I don't think. Now, for mere mortals, they were excellent. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, we were expecting to have at least a 60 share with your appearance, and we didn't get it. By the way, We also had football that day, and I think our show got pushed back to about midnight. So
GameStop stock before everybody found out, and then Robinhood closed, and that was my appearance, basically. I see how it is.
Yeah, I'm kind of saying that. But no, you were awesome on that, and we're going to get you back on it again. But we do this every Friday here on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. How you doing, my man? Everything going well?
I'm good, man. Happy Friday to you. And you've been busy. You've been all over the place. You're calling SportsCenter dunks and all kinds of stuff. So, you know, I'm sitting here getting ready for spring training, hopefully, and hopefully have some Cardinals news to discuss before we get there. We'll see. But I'm good, man. I'm good and ready for the weekend.
I was doing the Missouri Valley this week, and the Valley has set it up because many of the teams, like across basketball, have been hit with COVID-19, and so they have a layoff. And Drake came in to their game with Missouri State at 13-0, one of five unbeatens. They had 23 days off, and they have to play coming back on the road against one of the better teams in the Valley in Missouri State, and they sweep those two games. So they're 15-0. They're getting votes. They're just on the outside of the top 25. I believe they're number 27. But it made me think of Arch Madness. And down in Springfield, Ben, they allow 4,000 fans. There's about 2,000, maybe 2,500. I'm telling you what, man. I cannot wait for fans to come back. I was courtside doing a game with fans, and you could have told me there was 20,000 people in there. It just makes a difference, and we've gotten accustomed to seeing the cutouts and no fans, but man, oh man, I know I'm stating the obvious, but I just can't wait to see fans get back in the stands and the difference of the atmosphere for everybody, coaches, players, broadcasters, everybody. It just makes such a difference.
Well, I'm excited the Blues are starting to get their numbers up, and it's a credit to them and the city for working together to increase the numbers at Enterprise, because while it's awesome they've been allowing those 300 frontline workers to get in, it's hard to make much noise when you're 300 people in a hockey game. But I think you get that number up above 1,000 and you'll start to feel a little bit of home ice advantage. I love to hear that about things going well in Springfield, and hopefully can continue. I thought the same thing watching Missouri lose to Auburn in basketball this week. They weren't anywhere close to capacity down there in Auburn, but they did have enough people in there that you could kind of feel the momentum of the game.
Right.
And I think that's huge. Even something will help. And you mentioned the Valley, man. There's talk now that the Valley might be more than a one-team league, which would be absolutely awesome for the Valley. So congrats to Drake. And I know there are probably some Drake fans who are listening here for various reasons, but their team's off to a heck of a start, and nice for them to come out with a full head of steam after COVID. That's not an easy thing to do post COVID, as we saw with SLU Hoops. Now the Billikens had a pause that was, you know, probably unlike any other team in the country. But you know, we saw against Dayton maybe some rust and some fatigue issues that probably would not have been the case if the Billikens would have been playing all these games. But I'm glad that teams are finding their way back, and glad that fans are finding their way back, because a little is going to go a long way as we build our way back up to full crowds here.
No doubt. I want to switch gears, and it again is a COVID-19 theme. Unfortunately, Vegas hit with COVID in the Blues situation last night, supposed to play. That game was canceled. Hopefully they'll make it up. There is wiggle room in the schedule to try to do this. The NHL set that up, so we'll get more details on that as we go forward with the season. Blues will be in Anaheim this weekend. It's really going to be touchy, isn't it? It's going to be touch and go. I mean, Dallas got hit early on this season. We don't know about Vegas. And it's just, I guess if you're a coach, you're a manager, you're an assistant coach, you're a player, you're the owner, you wake up every morning and you probably get a report and you look at, okay, good. Oh, no negative test. All right, we can play. I just can't imagine what this is like for all these teams trying to get through this and just trying to make this a go and have a season.
Well, then you have to worry about the other team.
That's right.
You can check all your boxes and find out, oh, this road trip we took is basically negated, or at least one of the games, because of something going wrong with the other team. So the Blues, you know, continue with their practice. They at least got a productive day out of it. But you're right. I mean, here they are trying to get that elusive second win after a really nice game in terms of you know, I think everybody had assumed, oh, Vegas is rolling. They're off to a great start. Well, the Blues said not so fast here. We have a say in this division too, but then a chance to kind of get the sweep and it falls out from underneath you through nothing that you can do. So yeah, it's going to be like every sport, man. There's going to be hiccups and stalls, and it's going to be about how focused you can be and how you can overcome some adversity. You know, you hate to see it, but we also knew it was going to be something that happened as these teams start to try to navigate these regular seasons without a bubble. Looking back, I think baseball kind of caught some, so a lot of heat for being the first team, the first league that tried to go through a regular season without a bubble. And, you know, and I felt the same way too. You look at what these other leagues did and man, the bubble seems to work, but I can also understand how that's really not realistic for them to try to do during a regular season. So now we're seeing the pauses and the stoppages in hockey and basketball. We're seeing some of these leagues that crushed their bubbles for the postseason realize that it is, you know, they're kind of starting to look like baseball. And to baseball's credit, it kind of got its act together. Really, the Cardinals outbreak, I think, was kind of a wake-up call.
Sure was.
The rest of the league. So that's just going to be how it works. It's going to be stops and starts and fits, and you just hope that you can get through some semblance of a regular season to the point that you can have a more protected, insulated, bubbled up postseason. I think that's really wise. We're seeing every sport from, you know, NHL to March Madness for college basketball say we're going to try to get even more strict and more secure for the postseason because you really don't want that to be wrecked. But if basically you're kind of just, you know, tied up with a regular season that's going to be probably screwed up with all kinds of postponements. You just try to make the best of it that you can.
I've got some storylines I want to get into with the Blues. Some good, some bad. One would be they're the second most penalized team in the league. That's not good, and they're very good 5-on-5. So staying even strength is obviously big for them. Bennington, 5-on-5, fourth best save percentage in the league. And Jordan Kyrou has turned into one of the top forwards already for the Blues this year. He has been tremendous. Those are some of the takeaways that I've seen so far with the Blues. Like I said, some good, some bad. But all in all, I think it's been a pretty good start.
Yeah, start with the good. Bubble Bennington stayed at Edmonton.
Yes, and that was
that was a big question.
Stayed in bubble wrap.
Yeah, he's good. And it's back to being good. And he's really saved their bacon a few times already. He looks great. I think there's some fair questions about the backup, Ville Husso. It's been a rough introduction for him. He hasn't gotten a ton of help, but he's also going to need to play better if they're going to ever going to be able to get Jordan a break here. And again, the penalties, they got to cut down on them. I think they feel like they're being unfairly targeted. Initially, Ruby was saying, hey, we got to be better. Well, that tone has changed now that, now he's starting to say they're not letting us play. So he might be getting a bit of a discipline from the league for complaining a little bit about the officiating. But I think he's kind of trying to make a point there that maybe he feels like their eyes are on the Blues a little too much. And also the Blues have taken some pretty nasty hits from opponents that have not been penalized or picked up on by the player safety committee, when it seems like every time the Blues have a questionable hit, somebody gets tagged. So Berube's sticking up for his guys a little bit. I mean, but look, you can't have Ryan O'Reilly, who's one of the least penalized players on the team, getting ticky-tack penalties, putting them on the penalty kill. The good news is their penalty kill has gotten better, but you nailed it. They're so good at 5-on-5, they can't just keep giving away these opportunities. So if the game's being called that way against them, they got to adjust. I mean, you can't just complain about the officiating. You actually have to change what you're doing and stop putting yourself in those spots. So, you know, Berube leaning on the officials publicly might help a little bit. Maybe it backfires. We'll see. But I think the players just have to be extra careful and smart and not pick up ticky-tack stuff. You got no problem having to kill a penalty when it's deserved, when it's earned, when you're sticking up for a teammate. But it's the little stuff, the little avoidable things that they've got to get out of, because they're hurting themselves. As far as Kyrou, I don't know how you could be more impressed with him. You know, we kind of wondered when the season started, they were clearing out space for him, and, you know, at the expense of a guy like Sammy Blais, who's played so well. And you just kind of wondered, okay, how long is he going to go before Berube gets sideways with him, because he's maybe not doing some of the little things, some of the, you know, the gritty stuff that Berube demands from his guys. And to Kyrie's credit, he's doing it. He's clearly, you know, an offensive talent. His speed is special, and he's got the most points on this team, but he's also doing the things that are going to keep him on the ice and keep him in Berube's favor. So I don't think anybody's worrying about his playing time anymore. I think that's an old storyline now. Now it's going to be, you know, how much more should they showcase him, and is he right now the best player on this team? I think you could ask some of the guys we would normally think are the best on this team, and they might tell you he is right now. So clearly a breakout performance for him, and you can see why the Blues really wanted to make a priority for this season, getting him that exposure. It's paying off for him.
I want to get into the Baseball Hall of Fame and a lot into this. Nobody gets elected to the Hall of Fame. Curt Schilling, his comments obviously hurting him. The steroid guys, they don't go in. Scott Rolen moves up more than anybody, so that's good if you're a Scott Rolen or a Cardinal fan. I've really thought long and hard about this, Ben, this week, and I want to get your perspective, because I think you offer a great sounding board on this, and come from a writer's perspective. Number one, I don't blame the writers. I think they've been put in an untenable position to have any success with this vote. I think the vote needs to be redone with the parameters of what is given to the writers, or do you bring other select people in? Maybe it's broadcasters that have been doing it on a daily basis for a number of years, people in the game of baseball, whatever. But the writers, to me, they should not be blamed. And they're, you know, some people say, well, they're acting like the morality police. Well, that's the rules that they've been given. I just think now we've gotten to a point that you got to just look at the numbers and what an individual does on the field at their time of play and the era in which they played. And that's it. And I know it's hard. We all have human biases, whether you like Curt Schilling or not, and what he said, whether you stand for it or not. Most people, I would say, do not. But you can't let that be a bias into what you're doing with that vote, because he is a Hall of Famer. Now, would it be an uncomfortable speech? Potentially. Would it be uncomfortable that some of the guys that voted him in, he disparaged? Yes. But he's a Hall of Famer, and those are the guidelines that we have right now. And I just think that the writers have been put in a really, really tough spot, and something probably needs to change.
Yeah, I mean, just for full clarity, I am a member of the BBWAA. I don't have a vote. I haven't been a card-carrying member long enough. I'll eventually get there, and I think by the timing, fortunately for me, I think some of this stuff will be ironed out by then.
How many years have you been? You been what? 2 or 3 years?
No, I mean, I've been back in St. Louis now going on 6.
Oh, wow. You've been a member of the BBW?
Yeah, okay. Since I got back.
Uh-huh. So you got 4 years. Well, you're going to have Ortiz. You're going to have A-Rod.
Not if he gets in next year.
Yeah. Well, good point. I mean, yeah. Good point.
Yeah. It's a lot of this will probably be decided by then. And look, I'm not saying I'm going to be glad that I won't have a say in it, but it'll be this ironed out.
Let me ask you this. Do you agree with my assessment of what I just went?
Yeah,
a lot of points
you
there.
Nailed it.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, I think you nailed it. And I do kind of look at things every year and go, okay, how would I vote if I was voting this year? But my point in saying that was I didn't sit down and study it like I would if I was actually casting a ballot. Right. And most of the people I know who vote, put a ton of time and thought into it. They care about it, and they don't just, it's not something they fill out and fire off the hip, or it's not something they carry their opinions in that can't be backed up by research and facts. Now, is every voter do it with that due diligence? Probably not. But I kind of push back against the idea that like this is the biggest thing in the world either. I mean, sometimes people have convinced themselves that this is like, you know, you hear from some people who are so angry about how a person voted. It's like, I don't understand really why people get so mad at individual ballots when the whole point of it is to have a collective opinion. So every nut job who votes for someone crazy, with whether they actually agree with it or whether they're just maybe didn't do enough research, they're balanced out by people who did. And that's the group, the writers, that the Hall of Fame has decided they want to have do this. So if the Hall of Fame wants it to be different, they can change it.
And that's my point.
And that's kind of my thing. And I agree with you. The Hall of Fame, I think, needs to decide on, you know, they need to make a call on this character clause stuff. And they need to decide, how is that supposed to be interpreted? There needs to either be, it needs to either be scrapped, which I would probably agree with, or it needs to be more defined. Is it character in terms of how they played the game? Is it character in terms of what they did off the field? And that's a very sticky situation. You ask 100 people, they'll give you 100 different answers because it's vague. So I think with respect to the Hall of Fame, I think it kind of benefits from that because it doesn't define it, and it kind of uses the writers as a shield a little bit, because then it doesn't have to be the bad guy.
That's my point.
And there are reasons, Dan, there are reasons a lot of prominent writers have said we're not voting.
Well, here's the thing. You had 14 blank ballots. So I would go to those 14 writers and say, look, if you didn't feel enough that there's not, I mean, there's Hall of Famers on that list. There are. And Scott Rolen, by all accounts, is as clean and as good a guy as you're going to find. And you're telling me that he's not a Hall of Famer, or a Billy Wagner, or whomever you want to throw in there that's not associated with some of the things that in the innuendos and suspicions of PEDs, whatever. But having said that, you had 14 blank ballots. Then take those away, because then they're not putting the time in my opinion. That's ridiculous. You can't have that. You can't have it both ways on that one.
Well, yeah, but here's the thing. If you no matter what group you assign it to, you're going to have people who you don't like their votes. So that's not, if you gave it to former players, and there'd be former players who did the same thing, because there will be former players who say there's not a Hall of Famer in this class. There are small hall former players, just like there are small hall writers, just like we could find small hall broadcasters. So this idea that there's one group that would get it right for every person every time, that's a myth. It just is impossible. So if the Hall wants to say by accepting a ballot, it means you vote for 10 people every time, then okay, but establish those rules. I mean, the writers are not the ones making up the Hall of Fame rules. The writers are the ones who are voting under the Hall of Fame guidelines as best as they understand them. I think a lot of people don't get that. That said, if a guy turns in a crap ballot, it should be public and he should have to answer for it. This idea of not having to explain why you voted, I think, is one that has improved. And I think there is more accountability now, which limits the number of bad ballots. If someone put in a blank ballot and they want to justify why they did it, you don't have to agree with them, but I appreciate the fact that they explain it. And I think that's improved. Where do I stand on Schilling? I kind of agree with you. If I had a ballot, I would have voted for him. I don't think he's a good guy. I don't really know what's going on with him. He seems to have almost mental problems. It's all screwed up. I don't know him personally. I don't love that he talks about, you know, wanting to, you know, encourages the slogans about hanging journalists and things of that nature. I think he's kind of a nut job. He definitely is a nut job, not kind of. However, when he played, he had a Hall of Fame career. There's never been any whiffs of him cheating. He won a ton of awards for his character and service during the game. I would have put a check next to his name. Where I struggle with are the PED guys. And, you know, I have a hard time with that, because to me, you know, trying to decide who did what, who did it, whether they admitted it or denied it, whether there's a preponderance of evidence. To me, someone who took performance-enhancing drugs should not be in the Hall of Fame. That's how I feel about it in my gut. I can understand people who vote, well, I don't think he did it. You know, I think he had a Hall of Fame career before he did it. Yes, but he still did it. His aided numbers distorted the records and changed the games, and it was a disservice to the people who played it clean. You know, but then there are people who say, well, the game didn't do anything to stop it, so why should the voters, you know, who are deciding the Hall of Fame? If a guy didn't serve a suspension for cheating, then why should the Hall of Fame punish him? I kind of understand that. I just, each guy has to come down with their gut. But to me, this notion that everybody that's in the Hall of Fame, and I'm going to tie this together with Schilling and PED users and everything, the notion that there aren't people in the Hall of Fame who cheated on the field, who were bad people off the field, whether that was racism or abuse of women or all these other terrible things, the idea that the Hall of Fame is full of a bunch of squeaky clean guys is a myth. So that to me is, you really get into the weeds and you start when you hold on and clutch this morality clause, because you know what, it's hard enough defining the best baseball players ever, but defining the best people ever, we don't even have enough information on these people that would be voting for in order to include that in the discussion. So baseball has a bad problem of romanticizing this idea that great players are great people, and it's just not necessarily true. There are examples of it, sure, but for every great person who's a great baseball player, there's a bad person who's a great baseball player. Just like there's a great, you can have a great person who's a great lawyer and a great person who's a bad lawyer, and vice versa. This idea that there's something that should be more than athletic performance on the baseball field factored into it, I think it really sets baseball up for these kind of failures.
I think you could put them on a separate wing or in a separate wing. You put it on their plaque. I don't care, but just put them in and be done with it and move on. And that's where I'm at. It's, you know, it gets talked about ad nauseum. And again, I think we've hit the main point, which is it needs to come from the Hall of Fame, and I don't blame the writers. I really don't. They're given this, you know, very gray set of rules to try to make these really important decisions for people that will be changing their lives, and it will. You go into the Hall of Fame, it changes your life. For some guys, financially. For others, it's the ultimate culmination of their careers. So, you know, it's a big deal. And I, you know, I'm in the game of baseball. You are too. You're around it every day. People talk about with great reverence what these people meant, those Hall of Famers, to the game. We talk about Cardinal Hall of Famers that way. So I just think that the Hall of Fame has got to get a better grip on what those voters are truly voting on. And don't blame the writers for it, but make sure that they have an understanding of what the black and white rules are for what they are looking at in terms of who they put into the Hall of Fame.
One thing that I think would make it a lot easier would be if the Hall of Fame would simply say, here's the ballot. Everyone on it has, to as our understanding, passed, you know, the requirements in order to be enshrined in terms of the character clause. And the Hall of Fame should have to decide.
Sure.
Who is, you know, and there's different views on what the Hall of Fame should be. Should it be a history of the game, you know, the story of the game? Because if it's the story of the game, then you got to have Barry Bonds in it. Because you can't just omit chapters that aren't great.
And Pete Rose and Sosa, all of them, yeah.
But if it's the Hall of Fame for people who played the game clean, then that's a different Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And we still don't have the Hall of Fame weighing in on that. It's left that up to the writers who take the shrapnel. And I'm not going to sit here and cry about the writers. If you have a vote, it's an honor. You do the best you can, then you move on. And people can like it or not. This whole hand-wringing over all of it is a bit much at times. And sometimes the writers feed into that. I mean, look, that MLB Network thing about Verducci filling out his ballot was a bit much for me. I mean, fill out the ballot, do your research, and send it off. But you can't, you know, talk about having the weight of history in your hands and then get mad when people get mad at you about it, because it's like, which way is it? It's really important, or it's not that important, or it's somewhere in the middle. But this idea that, you know, that it's just all the blame can be pushed on the writers, that's pretty. It's pretty myopic, and you nailed it when you said that it's really going to be the same thing people wrestle with no matter who they ask to vote for it, until the Hall of Fame kind of clears up some of the muddy water here.
All right, my man, we have solved again this Friday the biggest issues
you and
in
I
sports.
Should just pick it.
What? Just do what?
Just you and I should just pick everyone who's going into the Hall of Fame.
I'd love to have a vote. And then I say that, and then I go, I don't know if I really do. Not as currently constructed. I would struggle with it. And I do take it with, and I think the great majority of writers take a feeling of like Verducci and others, they say it's a great responsibility, right? It's
It is.
And so would I enjoy a Hall of Fame vote? Sure. Would I probably maybe in retrospect make some mistakes along the way, getting 10, 15 years down the road and look at it? Maybe. But I would definitely do the research like many of these guys do, but I would turn it in and not look back. You know, here's why I did it. I did it. But my thing, it would be, I'm not the morality police. I can tell you that. And my thing would be looking at the player. I would almost set my own set of rules with it, Ben, where I'd say, okay, my rules are, I'm not looking at who this person is now. I'm not looking at Curt Schilling. I'm not looking at Omar Vizquel. I'm not looking at any of that stuff. I'm looking at the era they played, what they did on the field between the white lines, and that's going to be my criteria. And that's probably how I would do it.
I think it would be hard enough to do it if that's what was asked.
Oh, for and sure.
It,
yeah.
You know, but now, because that is not exactly what is asked, it makes it even harder.
Absolutely.
And, you know, until that is squared away, then I think it's kind of almost an impossible task. And I admire the folks who try to do it the best way they can. And that's why I roll my eyes when I see certain people getting bashed for it, because, you know, as long as you can explain why you did it and have reasons that you believe in, then I think you might not agree with the ballot, but you say, okay, that person put their name on it and they send it in and they have the qualifications to do it.
Yeah.
You know, that's the other thing. And, you know, this, I don't mean this to sound condescending to folks, but if you want to vote, then go cover a team and get a vote. You know, the standards are there. You know, it's not like they're just giving out these things out to people on the street. So, you know, the idea that the writers can be blamed for all of it, it's convenient, but it's not very accurate.
My man, thank you. We'll catch you up next Friday. As always, you can read Ben Fredrickson on stltoday.com, the Post-Dispatch, and hear him every Friday right here on the website, scoopswithdannymack.com. I'll talk to you next Friday, my man. Thanks.
Sounds good, brother. Talk soon.